And we are back for another round. They're letting us do another round of the bandwagon. This is episode 3. I'm Lisa Brawls. I'm here with Brian Moline. They're letting us continue, Brian.
It's a miracle, isn't it?
It is a post-Halloween miracle, a World Series miracle. I don't know. So this is when Brian and I get together for a few minutes and we talk about sports, but it's not quite the more traditional hot takes breakdown, super analysis of what happened. It's more about how sports affect the larger culture and how we see sports. Brian's got a massive background in sports and broadcast, and I still want to talk sometime about how you used to call Little League games.
We
definitely have to talk about that sometime.
Those were fun days, but probably not today.
Not today. But we'll get to it because I definitely want to know more about that. And my background is I used to play, and I like to read about sports and watch most sports, some more than others. So that's why we're getting together and just sort of inviting you into the conversation. And I do want to remind people that if you like what you're hearing or you have ideas for us, you can reach us both on Twitter. I'm at Lisa Brawlts, LisaBraltz. And Brian's handle is?
It's at B Moline, WILL.
Yeah. So if there's something in the sports landscape or the sports and culture landscape that you want to talk about, let us know and we'll try to get to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think appropriate today, the day after the World Series has ended, or actually later the morning the World Series ended, mm-hmm. I think if you want to be technical about it, City Royals win the World Series in 5 games over the New York Mets. And yeah, I think an appropriate World Series winner this year. The Royals were one of the best teams all season long. They were the top seed, in fact, in the American League coming out, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. They took care of business. Really, other than a little hiccup in Game 3 there, they really did prove they were the better team this year.
Yeah, they looked great. Although I will admit, the game's plodding along. It's 2-0, 2-1, and then we're like, is this going to even end? And then it was tied. And then I was watching a little bit before I fell asleep, and then I told my husband after the 11th inning was complete, and so the changeover's happening, mm-hmm. running into the dugout, running out from the dugout. I'm like, I'm done. This could go on forever. But the rest of the world can thank me because I'm going to bed, and something really exciting will happen. So when I woke up this morning and checked my phone, that was like the first alert was from New York Times or something that they had won. And they didn't just, win. They, hammered them.
Yeah, and it was interesting, too, Lisa, that I think it was in 3 of the 4 wins that Kansas City had in the series, they came from behind late in the game to win, and that has kind of become the MO of this Royals team. I think I saw a stat today that in the postseason this year, the Royals scored 40 runs in the 8th inning or later of their games.
That's intense.
No other team in the postseason scored more than 5.
So what do you think accounts for that? How do they do that? Because for me, so much of baseball is swing and miss or swing and hit. And I know there's a lot of strategy. But how do you account for that?
I don't know if you really can account for it completely. I do think it does underscore one edge that Kansas City seemed to have over most of their opponents. And that is that their bullpen, their relief pitching was better than most other teams they faced. And the Mets are certainly in that category. Other than their closer, Familia, who himself had a few struggles against the Royals in the World Series, other than him, the Mets were not very confident at all in their bullpen. And I think you saw that in them sending Matt Harvey back out for the 9th inning last night. Even though he'd thrown over 100 pitches, he's a guy who there were concerns about his workload this year because he was coming off of Tommy John surgery. Terry Collins was going to take him out of the game, and
yes.
Matt Harvey basically demanded to
right.
be left in. So he went back out, walk, double, and the rally was on.
I just think of the feelings that are being felt mm-hmm. by those guys this morning. And in fact, I was reading an interview this morning where the manager was just like, I own that, my head told me one thing. I went with my heart and that's what happened,
mm-hmm.
So you missed it. I missed it. We did not see it. I guess there will be ways to watch online that 12th inning, but like I said, everybody has me to thank because I went to bed. And Brian and I were talking a little bit earlier, too, about the role of superstition in baseball and how it seems to me that baseball players are the weirdest, most superstitious group of athletes that I can think of. But the fans are, too. the fans are too. You know, they wear the rally caps, or they can't get up. And there have been commercials about superstition in sports, but for some reason, baseball just seems to bring it out in people.
Yeah, and to me, I think one of the best ways it's summed up is in the movie Bull Durham, where they talk about different ways that, you know, if you think you're playing well because of this, or if you think you're not playing well because of this, then you are.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think and every ball player, I think, has kind of come to understand that. And I think that rubs off on the fan base as well. Mm-hmm. You know, the fan bases see that, you know, whatever it is, if the teams are wearing the rally caps in the dugout. For the Cubs this year, it was a guy who put a bubblegum bucket on his head when they needed a rally. Every team seems to have their own little thing. And that stuff rubs off on the fans as well.
For sure. But I think for the players, like that superstition, and I'll definitely have to do more reading about this. It just seems like if something, one thing is amiss, it, for some people, it can get into their heads. It can really mess with them. Mm-hmm. And I wonder about that. You know, like I realize there are so many other factors for an athlete at that level that can really get inside their head. And your sock not being pulled up the right way probably should not be that thing, but is it?
I don't know either.
So
if you think it is,
yeah, then it is,
then maybe it is if you let it affect you mentally. So yeah, just interesting stuff there with superstition.
Well, so earlier today you and I were talking a little bit about it's been 30 years since the Royals won the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
And you think that they might have won it 30 years ago possibly related to a blown call.
Actually, it's the opposite. I think when they won it in 85, they probably shouldn't have won it.
Shouldn't have won, okay.
Or might not necessarily have won it if there had been instant replay back then. It was game six. There was a little ground ball play on the right side of the infield. And the throw over to first base, the umpire ruled the runner safe at first base, mm-hmm. whereas even video replays at the time, you know, back in standard definition 1985.
No super slow, like painfully slow-mo.
Those replays showed that the runner was pretty clearly out by almost a full step. It really wasn't a particularly close play, for video to pick up back in 1985. Well, a lot of other things happened after that play, but that one play kind of opened the floodgates for the Royals to rally in that game. They won game six, then came back in game seven and blew out the Cardinals something like 11-0 to win the 85 World Series. Cardinal fans have been sore about that ever since.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But last night, of course, was the first time the Royals have won a championship since then.
So we talked a little bit about the role of technology in officiating games. As you mentioned, most professional sports now incorporate some sort of review, mm-hmm. or technology to designate, yes, this goal happened, or no, that didn't happen. And I have said, and I still sort of believe this, and maybe it's just me being old fashioned or very get off my lawn about it all, but I find that having humans call games adds a human element to games. That is just somehow, like, that's kind of what sports is, you know, to me. It's played by humans and humans are calling the games. I'm not against the technology. And actually, we watch a lot of soccer in our house, and the goal line technology is just now being incorporated. And there have been World Cups and other matches where you definitely know that the refs got it wrong. But that's just how it is in sports. That's how the cookie crumbles. That's the way the shoe dropped that day. And now we're starting to take that away. And I'm not saying I'm against it. It just seems kind of weird. And I'm wondering what you think about that.
Well, I think in sports, there are two different types of calls. There are the concrete fair ball, foul ball, out of bounds, inbounds,
yes.
touchdown, goal, etc. There are those types of calls. And I am totally for replay being used in those instances. In those instances, get the call right. Absolutely, 100%. I'm in favor of getting the call right. Now, there are other aspects in every sport that are definitely more of a judgment call. Whether that's in baseball, I think the example I gave you off the air was the umpire's calling a balk on a pitcher.
Right.
There's a subjective thing there. Are you intentionally trying to deceive the runner? There are certain criteria in mm-hmm, place mm-hmm. that determine whether you can do certain things or not. Some guys are more prone to call balks than others. That's one example. Then I would say, for instance, in football, pass interference,
sure,
holding,
right,
those types of things are subjective. Every referee may have a little bit different way of looking at it, even though in the rule book it's the same for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Soccer, a foul, for instance, that's a very subjective call.
Mm-hmm.
Those types of things I don't think you're ever going to have called by instant replay, you know, machines, etc. But I think there's a difference between those types of calls, mm-hmm, and the more concrete calls that are made.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the subjective calls that you're talking about are more run of play kinds of things, mm-hmm, and like when does the official insert themselves into the match or game so much that making those kinds of calls is interfering. And I think in soccer there is another, besides the goal line technology, I think offsides, if they were able to call that, that's humans. And I swear the poor humans on the sideline get so much grief, mm-hmm, from fans about offside. And I'm sort of like, I understand it, but since I grew up watching hockey, I have a really hard time reconciling the two different, because they're both offsides. And then you have offsides in football, but that's a totally different thing. But
oh, yeah.
But offside in hockey is different than offside in soccer. And I just can't see it. Like my daughter and my husband will be watching and they're like, oh man, he was so off. I'm like, how can you tell? Like, they can be at the opposite end of the field. And I understand the concept. And if you've ever watched the film Bend It Like Beckham, mm-hmm, the way that he explains it with the salad dressing and the salt shakers and stuff, it's pretty good. But I guess I should watch that like a couple times a year just to sort of refresh. But it's still really hard for me to see. And I think that might be a type of call like what you're talking about, with that could be more concrete, you know, where a camera could capture when the ball leaves the player's foot and where everybody else is, because you can see it later.
Yeah.
And they don't stop games in soccer to review. Almost all the other sports we're talking about, they will take the time out to review. And in soccer, they don't stop for anything unless somebody's injured. And even then, the clock is still running.
Yeah. And I think the best replay review system I've seen, and I think the sport is helped by it because you're dealing with a very confined area, is tennis.
Yes.
The replay system they have for inbounds, out of bounds, if a player wants to challenge a linesperson's call, it's almost instantaneous. They challenge. They take like 10 seconds to show where the ball landed. Okay, you win the challenge. You lose the channel. We move on.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of subjective calls in tennis. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're slamming your racket around or whatever, but that has nothing to do with the actual game. And I think tennis has come a long way. It, like back in the 80s when they were first doing Hawkeye, and it would just go off at random sometimes, mm-hmm, before anybody even served. It has come a long way, and I don't necessarily have a problem with that. But they still have their lines people. They've got like 9 or 10 people out there calling balls in and out, and so I guess for now the machines are back up.
Yeah, they're back up. So we'll see what happens there. So that's instant replay is certainly coming up in the world. That's for sure. Every sport, it's becoming more and more prevalent. Something that happened on Friday, kind of your Friday afternoon news dump, if you will, came from ESPN.
Big news dump.
And they, if you haven't heard, I'm sure most sports fans have by now, but they basically have stopped operating the website Grantland, which was started by Bill Simmons a few years ago,
mm-hmm,
as kind of a home for more long-form sports writing, sports and culture, some pop culture things in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think a place people could go, and when they went there, they weren't exactly sure what they were going to read, but they knew they were going to read some pretty good stuff by a wide variety of people.
Oh, yeah. And not only that, they also had a podcasting arm.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I know, those podcasts are still available on iTunes, but I don't think they're making any new ones. I mean,
right.
I think it's over. And I think it's a huge loss. You know, I grew up in the 70s and 80s. We subscribed to Sports Illustrated. There's a lot of really great long-form journalism in that magazine at the time. That was really how I started to care about sports, besides something that I played or watched my brother play or watched on television. So I think it's a huge loss, because I also feel like I think a lot of people really like sports, but they want more with their sports.
Mm-hmm.
They don't just want the scores or the analysis or the gossip.
The hot take.
Mm-hmm. And the shouting, you know, if we had a camera in here like they do for so many of those other talk shows, you see everybody just gesturing and like pointing at each other and like, you know, that's not necessarily what we're into here. But I think people do are interested in sports and their effects on the culture and how the games are played and technology as part of sport. And there was an article we'll get to another time just about Ohio State University, some of the training that they're doing using mm-hmm. technology with their players, I thought was fascinating. And we'll get to that. But those are the kinds of things that I think, even if you're not into football, those are really interesting articles to read. And so we've lost this great source. And it makes me wonder, what is going on over at ESPN? What is happening that they would do that? And I think some of the other podcasts that you and I have talked about from ESPN and some of the other things that they've offered are starting to fall by the wayside. And I just wonder what this is going to mean for some of the coverage of other sports.
Yeah, I think the beginning of the end for Grantland came when Bill Simmons left this spring. He was the one who started it. He was the biggest champion.
He left, in air quotes.
Yeah. So once Bill Simmons was no longer with ESPN, that was probably writing on the wall that Grantland might be in trouble. At the time, of course, ESPN said, no, we're going to keep going on with it, et cetera, but that didn't happen for very long. What I read a little bit looking at some of the business side for ESPN, I think we talked about maybe in the first edition of this podcast that I was a cord cutter. Mm-hmm. Well, more people are doing that, and so the number of people that are subscribing to cable, satellite, which I think ESPN gets $6 per subscriber from every cable company, satellite company for ESPN, those numbers are going down. So ESPN's revenue has taken a bit of a hit.
Yes.
And ESPN, a few years back, really started bidding aggressively on live sporting events, Monday Night Football, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big outlay for them in terms of money. And they were counting on the cable subscribers to keep going up to account for that. Well, it hasn't. And so you're seeing not only Grantland shut down, but I think they laid off something like 300 people a few weeks ago as well. So we'll see what happens with ESPN long term. If they can somehow get those subscriber numbers back up, maybe it's through some kind of an on-demand thing that they do themselves for people to subscribe for X dollars a month to get ESPN content. I don't know what that'll be, but their current model looks like it might need some tweaking.
Yeah, definitely. And it makes me wonder, you know, are people just more invested in watching? Are they more invested in listening? You know, is it necessary to have that print component, that sort of deeper analysis, those kinds of conversations? I vote yes. I mean, that I've always felt that is a huge enhancement to the enjoyment of sports, and to just sort of jettison your journalism, your longer form journalism side, your more cultural analysis side, maybe in the podcast. And they had several. They didn't just have sports podcasts. They had like a pop culture podcast that did have some sports in it. But I think it's interesting to see how all of those pieces relate. You know, it's sort of like this tension between liberal arts and hard science. You know, you kind of, you know, hard science is great, but the liberal arts help us understand and explain like what it is that we're doing with all this technology. And so I feel like having the writing about sports really has helped explain sports' place in the larger culture, and how even if you're not paying that much attention, it is a part of us. Sports have been around since people have, you know, learned how to throw rocks or whatever, you know. So I just feel like it's a big loss, and I am curious to see what they do. And it's also a reminder that if there's something that you appreciate, if there's good media, then you got to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to pay for it. These people are writers, and they're very good, and they need to get paid for what they do, and it costs money to do that.
Yeah, we've seen really all sorts of different models for media evolving here over the last 20, 30 years. Really, the first one that started to really go through a lot of changes was the newspaper business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're still trying to figure things out to some degree. Some of them are transitioning better than others. New York Times, for instance, Washington Post, I think some of those are transitioning into the digital subscriber model and doing at least okay.
Right.
Others are not faring so well. Then you've got the magazines, which I think are really, you know, they're suffering as well. How many magazines now, I mean, they publish online, but I don't think Sports Illustrated charges to see their stuff online, so they're still trying to do it exclusively through advertising.
Mm-hmm.
How much longer can they and Time and some of the other stalwarts on the magazine front really keep going?
Well, I see what's happening with print, with magazines in particular, reminds me a lot of what is happening with what in the music business they called finished product. Mm-hmm. In the music industry, not so much CDs, but certainly vinyl, where publications, I think, are heading into the world of being, they'll never go away, but they'll be a niche thing as opposed to a mainstream thing. I think mm-hmm. the mainstream thing is moving over to the internet and to the web, especially as mobile technology has just really taken off and so many more people are consuming content. I'm air quoting here, consuming content that way. You know, so I think of something like the Pitchfork Quarterly, which is a print quarterly. It's this bound, beautiful thing that costs $15 four times a year. That, as a reader, is something actually that I would much rather see than something filled with advertisements 12 times a year for $5. So mm-hmm. So I think maybe print will be around. Analog print will be around, but I think it'll reach a niche audience. Having stuff online is really important, but again, monetizing that. You mentioned the New York Times and the Washington Post, and they have dumped so much of their resources into digital that they can sort of move with the times a little bit and sort of, you know, correct their mistakes a lot faster than a smaller newspaper could, mm-hmm. you know, where sinking that many resources into digital and then doing it wrong could be a lethal mistake. And I think the larger publications are starting to figure it out. But Grantland, I'll really miss that. It'll be interesting to see what happens with ESPN. I don't think the quality of the writing on the rest of their site is anywhere close to what that was. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, it's a sad one to lose, that's for sure. And we'll see if I think there's been talk that Bill Simmons will pick up at least some of those writers for his newest project,
yep.
and hopefully they will, you know, be able to work that way and still, you know, be able to make a living through writing. But it's certainly a big transition. Well, here we are toward the end of episode 3 of the Bandwagon.
We've made it, and now who knows what we're going to talk about next week? There's no baseball. What are
no
we going to do?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. What are we going to do? We've got a week to think about it.
I'm sure we'll figure it out. And again, if you have something that you would like to hear us discuss, investigate in the interim, you know, I'm happy to, and I know Brian is too, educate ourselves on something that, you know, not just sit here and pontificate, but actually, like, you know, learn a few things and relay those things to you. Let us know on Twitter at Lisa Braltz.
And at B Moline, WILL.
So I'm Lisa Braltz. Thanks for joining us.
I'm Brian Moline. Take care.